When it comes to income inequality, a key problem isn't just jobs, it's those part-time temp jobs. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A new report today finds income inequality on the rise in many parts of the world, including the U.S. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development crunched the numbers, which indicate the gap between rich and poor is 7 times larger now compared to the 1980s. The OECD's Secretary General said today that, quote, high inequality is bad for growth. On the line from London is the head of statistics for our partner broadcaster, the BBC, Anthony Rubin. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So what accounts for some of this rise in inequality that the OECD is tracking?
They say that the what they call the non-standard forms of employment, so things like temporary contracts and part-time contracts, which they say have been growing much faster than other forms of employment. And what they're saying is that households who are dependent for their income on these sorts of employments are considerably more likely to be in poverty than other households.
I was just seeing some statistics from the United Kingdom. Most of the new jobs have been non-standard, the ones created since the 1990s.
There's some disagreement about that because it's quite hard to tell which are the new jobs, and because no one puts out figures for new jobs. You just have how many jobs there are this month and how many jobs there were last month. But the OECD has found a source for this and is saying that the new jobs are down to these non-standard employment methods.
And when it comes to inequality, as measured by the OECD, which countries are the most unequal? Which are doing a little better?
There's no single sort of agreed measure of inequality, but one of the most popular ones is something called the Gini coefficient. And that's a number between 0 and 1, where 0 means that everybody gets paid the same amount, and 1 means that one person gets paid all the money. So you want to be closer to 0 than to 1 if you're going to be less unequal. We see that the most unequal country on this is Chile, followed by Mexico and then Turkey, and then comes the USA. So you guys are pretty high up on that. Then there's Israel, and then comes the United Kingdom. So we're both pretty high up on this. If you go down to the other end of the scale, you see Denmark as the most equal. Then you've got Slovenia and Slovakia and Norway. US and UK pretty high up. We've got Scandinavia pretty low down.
Gini coefficient, if you're Googling later, G-I-N-I. Anthony Rubin is head of statistics for the BBC. Anthony, thank you.
Thank you.
Government tells us that the economy is growing, nearly 7 years since the Great Collapse, but it's not growing briskly. Wages are barely budging, and some economists think we've entered an ongoing state of tepidness, secular stagnation, these economists like to call it. Well, what fixes that? Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell thinks the city of New York offers one lesson, because the city these days, despite its problems, did not turn out to be the dystopia predicted by many, from sociologists to filmmakers. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
You want to invite us to a New York from years gone by?
Yes. Yeah, so I was watching cable TV, and New York was a maximum security prison. And then 1991, I was watching New Jack City, and then New York was just crime-ridden. This was the popular image of New York, and actually there was some truth to it. And what I think these secular stagnationists, these economists that are worried about it, they should watch these movies and then think about this question. How has New York managed to change in what? A generation to becoming the thriving metropolis it is today?
That's a good question. But Chris, you've been thinking about it. What might be your answer?
The answer, with the benefit, the crystal clear benefit of hindsight, David, is that it was immigrants. And just to give you one number, 1970, the population that was foreign-born in New York was 18%. 2000, 36%. It is that immigrant energy that changed New York.
All right, so you have numbers showing there are more immigrants, but you think that sort of an entrepreneurial spirit that people bring with them to this country to start a new life is really what drove New York forward?
They made the pie bigger. They made the economy more dynamic. And they fought the stagnation or the downward spiral, really, that was going on in New York. And New York is what it is today because of immigrants.
Now, I myself am the product of immigrants who came to New York City in the last century. So I'm hearing you, Chris, but I mean, New York's renaissance wasn't all that Wall Street money sloshing around, or the rise of media, fashion, and tech in New York, or, I don't know, foreign money piling into real estate here?
All those things mattered. They were important. Wall Street, you know, it has its ups and downs, and Wall Street does well, and we had the junk bond era. But, you know, the wealth in Wall Street tends to be fairly concentrated. And, you know, what happened with the immigrants is that they went into all these neighborhoods, the Lower East Side, into the Bronx, into Brooklyn, and they started businesses, and they start buying homes. And it is that that will break the back or the risk of secular stagnation.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And there's news. The CEO of Lumber Liquidators, Robert Lynch, has unexpectedly resigned, no reason given. Government regulators are looking into reports that some laminate flooring produced in China and sold in the U.S. contained unsafe levels of formaldehyde. Lumber Liquidators is offering air quality testing kits for people concerned about the flooring they put in and has suspended sales of the flooring in question. About a month ago, the firm's CFO also walked the plank. The Lumber Liquidators founder is stepping in temporarily. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.